And with a look in the backcountry on the fun with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So it's another warm morning in the mountains, which will not allow for the snow surfaces to refreeze. There's a few zones in Big Cottonwood Canyon that are the exception. Spruce's reported temperature is just around 30 degrees this morning, so it might have refroze lower in those elevations. Today, that storm system is moving through, but we'll have another warm morning, temperatures near 50 before it starts to decrease throughout the day. But some good news, the snow showers may develop late this afternoon and overnight, with accumulation on the light side, 3 to 6 inches of new snow. And on the topic of snow, it looks like a more active pattern should set up around April 12th with the hope of a little bit more powder riding before the season ends. Yesterday, we had one report of a natural avalanche on Lone Peak, and then otherwise resorts continue to report wet, loose avalanches occurring throughout the day. The main thing that we're thinking about right now is this wet snow. So it's a pretty complex problem in that it can be very predictable and unpredictable at the same time. We know that the snow surface is going to get warm, it's going to start melting, and it's going to create wet avalanches as the day wears on. What we don't know is the extent and the timing of this avalanche activity. What we know is that if the slope is wet and unconsolidated, we don't want to be on it or underneath it when it starts to become wet. So we're looking for two types of avalanches today. The first is wet loose avalanches. These just typically occur within the layers of wet snow near the surface. You see those as point releases. They start at one point, they fan out. They can entrain a lot of snow and are especially dangerous in tight or steep sustained terrain where you could get caught and knocked off your feet. The second issue is wet slab avalanches. These are tougher and we haven't seen any wet slab activity yet, but we're on our third day with temps above freezing overnight. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some wet slab activity during the day. What happens is your slab is that stronger snow and it fails on wet saturated snow grains below the snowpack somewhere. So today, with those overnight temperatures that didn't allow a solid refreeze and the morning temperatures remaining warm, the snowpack's going to start out warm and wet this morning, so it won't take much for the heating or the sun to cause wet avalanches to occur. We could see both natural and human-triggered avalanches on all aspects today, and that could lead to a considerable avalanche danger. Slopes on the north side of the compass that don't see quite as much sun are going to be moderate, but we could still see wet snow activity on those aspects as well.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with architect Amir Tursik and vice president of development for Peg Companies, Robert Schmidt. We'll be talking about the affordable housing, which was one of the subjects discussed at last week's Park City Council meeting. Then the owner of Adolph's Restaurant, Adolph and Bowden, who after a 47-year run in Park City is closing the doors of his restaurant. He'll tell us about that. Finally, the Christian Center of Park City Counseling and Wellness Center Program Coordinator Catherine Kirchheimer will be telling us about some of the programs and services that the team offers. Well, as we reported, the developer of the parking lots there at the base of Park City Mountain Resort has come in with a revised plan for affordable and workforce housing, doubling the number of units as originally presented. On the phone, I have the Vice President of Development for Peg Companies, Robert Schmidt. He's joined by architect Amir Tursik. Good morning to both of you.
Morning. Good morning, Leslie. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, Robert, let's start with you. The project, of course, has been followed closely by the community. Certainly some community criticism. We've got an anti-overdevelopment group following this very closely. At one point, now we're coming in with twice the number of affordable units. Is this a way to try and appease the community here?
Well, Leslie, I mean, we need to keep in mind that our proposal has never changed regarding the affordable housing. The same number of units essentially has been included in our proposal from day one. So, I would say, the answer to your question is no, not necessarily. What we're proposing is in alignment with the affordable housing guidelines. We've always been in alignment with those guidelines, the current resolution, and I would say that we've refined a few things as we've gone along in our preparations and conversations with Planning Commission. But our proposal has not changed.
You've always had 161 units because what was been reported was that it was from 80 to 161. Where did the 80 come from?
It was the original 1998 master plan was 80 beds was the requirement. Mm-hmm. And today our proposal is 161 beds. It's a different calculation than was used in 1998. So trying to get it to an apples and apples comparison, that's about what it is. So it's about double the number of beds, but you know, provided in a mix of dorm style units and 1, 2, and even potentially 3-bedroom apartment units.
So, all right. So in terms of the square footage, nothing's really changed?
In terms of the square footage of the affordable housing?
Correct.
No, the square footage of the affordable housing is substantially more than was proposed in 1998. Again, that's in accordance with the current housing resolution.
Okay. So this was something that you actually had to bring in then to meet the resolution?
Yeah. Yeah. It's in compliance with today's resolution. And, you know, some of the semantics around the development agreement, you know, we theoretically could have built 80 beds offsite, you know, before we started our project, and that would have complied with and fulfilled the requirement. We chose to, you know, provide the housing on-site and comply with today's resolution.
Well, and as you heard Councilmember Becca Gerber asking at last Thursday's meeting, you have the property, which is sometimes the hardest part of any kind of development. Are you sure you're building enough for the long term?
I guess, you know, when we look at that question, we believe that we are. You know, it's a substantial amount of housing. And keep in mind that the requirements, you know, that go into the calculations of how much housing is required really is based on the project that we're building, the, you know, the commercial space that we're providing, the number of condo units that we're building. You know, that's what drives the requirement for the housing at the base. And so certainly, you know, for the project that we're building, we believe that there will be plenty of housing and maybe even a little excess.
All right. Let's locate these for us. These are going to go in the upper parking lot. They're across from Shadow Ridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the upper lot, that's what we refer to as Parcel B. And the units will be in the building primarily that runs parallel with Shadow Ridge Drive. There will be a few units also in the main building along Lowell Avenue. But yeah, it will be up there on that upper lot.
All right. And underneath, we will have some underground parking, or is that these units are going on top of that above ground parking?
Yeah, the parking is both below ground and slightly above ground, but it's wrapped by condos and housing units, and so you will never see the parking structure. You won't know that it's there. It will be as if it were all underground. And so, you know, the affordable housing units and the condo units wrap around the parking structure and sit on top of the parking structure.
All right, and then the underground is going there at the top of the hill or at the bottom? Because there's quite a bit of evolution.
It will be kind of over the whole parcel. It's kind of woven into the into the design.
Okay. So what else is there in Parcel B? And is that going to be done all at once as phase one?
Yeah. So we've got the parking there and then the affordable housing and then a number of for sale market rate condo units will be on Parcel B, a mix of 1, 2, and 3-bedroom along with some townhouse style units along Empire Avenue.
All right. Let's see. And the plan with the 161 beds, we've got 77 of those actually planned for sale as opposed to rental. Since it's being built for employees who work at the new base facilities that you're building, or perhaps if there's room for Vail Resort employees, how do you ensure that they're being purchased by those working there? And then what happens if somebody, you know, goes and works for the school district or something?
Well, keep in mind, you know, the housing it's affordable housing, you know, it's intended to supply housing stock, you know, for people within certain income brackets. So while some of these units are for sale, and you know, the eligibility requirements will go through the city's housing office. They'll make sure that the people that purchase are qualified. We do have a prioritization plan that we've presented that says, you know, if we have employees that are working in our facilities, they'll kind of have a first shot. If we can't sell the units to our employees, then the next layer of prioritization would be Vail Resort employees, and then it goes from there to employees that are working at the base at existing businesses, and then after that, it opens up to the whole community. So there's a trickle effect, or a waterfall effect, I suppose, that you know, we propose to make sure that we can, you know, provide units to both our employees and others at the base. And then, you know, once a person has purchased a unit, and you know, if they decide that they want to take a job somewhere else, as long as they still qualify, you know, in the income, you know, in the income brackets, they can stay there. That won't be an issue.
All right. So when we talk about that 45% AMI, we're looking at Summit County. I mean, we're already up to $100,000 or something for the MI.
Yes.
What is that 45%? Is that a $12 an hour job?
Well, I'd have to get into the calculations kind of to clarify how that works. But yeah, the way we calculated the rent for a single bed in the dorm style unit. So we're using dorm style units to satisfy the 23 bed requirement from Marriott Mountainside, and we ran a calculation, for the housing authority at $12 an hour. That I don't know where that falls in relation to AMI, but we demonstrated that rent for, you know, a single bed in the dorm style unit based on a $12 an hour wage, rent would be around $600 a month.
Yeah. Okay. So, Amir, tell me about these dorm style units, these 24 beds. We're talking about a unit, and then what, like 40, 50 square foot bedrooms, big enough for maybe what, a bed and a dresser, each with a door for privacy?
As Robert alluded to, Leslie, there will be a variety of unit types, starting with the dorm types that would have multiple beds and common kitchen and living room areas, that then also transition into a 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units that would be approximately 900 square feet in average.
Okay, so the 8 beds would fit in the 900 square foot unit? Is that what you're telling me?
No, those units would be potentially larger.
Leslie, let me answer that question.
Thanks.
Because we've built these units in other locations, and the 8 bed dorm style unit is a private bedroom with shared kitchen and living area. The bedroom itself it meets code requirements. It's big enough for a bed, a dresser, a little seating area, and a door. You know, so there's privacy. And then the bathrooms are sized, you know, we've got double sinks in every bathroom. They're outside of the water closet and the shower area. So really provide a nice functional space for individuals within these dorm style units. And then, you know, those are different than the apartment style units that would be, you know, the 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units that,
yeah,
Amir was talking about.
Exactly. And that's what I guess I was trying to focus on, was just these dorms, just to give people an idea of what they're getting for $625 a month. So are there, what, 3 full baths in? Or how many toilets,
yeah,
and how many showers?
Typically we have 2 full baths, so 2 showers, and then we have another half bath. One of the configurations that we proposed.
Yeah. Okay.
So they work out really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then the others, the 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, units, again, both for sale and for rent. And it looked like the top price on those up to about $1,100. Is that a bedroom or is that for the entire unit?
That would be for the entire unit.
Okay. All right. Let's see, which ones are going to be then for sale? I mean, there will be 1-bedroom units for sale as well as 2- and 3-bedroom units, or?
Yeah, so, you know, we haven't determined the exact mix of units that will be for sale. You know, typically a for sale unit is going to be probably a two or a three bedroom unit, just because they allow for families and a little bit of growth, within the unit. But the exact mix of that hasn't been determined at this point.
All right. Also, as part of phase one, you're going to build what's being called an enhanced transit center. Talk to me a little bit about that. What is that? I mean, I guess what I thought I had heard is that we're going to see something similar to what we see today, just expanded, that there's really no center, but really just that semicircle where buses pulled out will be enlarged to add more buses at one time. Or is there something more to that?
Well, we hope it looks different than it does today. We're going to enhance it by significantly upgrading landscaping, providing bus shelters, protected bus shelters with seating areas and places for people to set their skis. The accessibility of the buses themselves will be dramatically improved with spaces for buses to pull in and wait, and then pick up passengers and then leave without getting stuck behind other buses. Charging stations for buses, and then improved accessibility both to the existing base areas through ramps and sidewalks and the new facilities as well. So it will be a much enhanced experience, ease of access, ease of buses getting in and out, and beautification with landscaping and features that will provide a real sense of arrival, in this beautiful alpine terrain that says you're here at Park City Mountain Resort, and people will be excited to jump off the bus and get on the mountain.
And that we're talking about really a similar location, kind of that just would walk up there to that skating rink level?
Yeah. So the location itself will stay where it is, but we'll provide a full turnaround for the buses so they can turn around and go back north on Lowell Avenue.
Okay. And then the timeline on getting this through the Planning Commission. I think at one point you had hoped to start construction perhaps as soon as this spring and summer. Is that likely delayed for a year or?
Yeah, it is at this point. We're hopeful to wrap things up with Planning Commission here in the next couple of months, and then we'll have a clearer picture on the timeline.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I think that's good. Certainly appreciate the time today, Leslie, and looking forward to a couple more meetings with the Planning Commission and engaging with the community and getting to a point where the Planning Commission is ready to take a vote.
Okay. Again, we're looking for a conditional use permit. Is that what you're before the Planning Commission for?
It's a master plan amendment. We'll be back for conditional use permits after Planning Commission hopefully approves us. We would then come back for conditional use permits at the next step.
Okay. I appreciate your explanation, Robert, and your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
After a 47-year run in Park City, Adolph's Restaurant closing its doors this spring. In the studio to tell us why and what's next, I have the owner and chef of the business, Adolph and Bowden. Hi, Adolph.
Good morning.
Hard to believe it's happening. Yeah.
Yes, what's happening? Yeah, a lot of these things came up and with a surprise, but we knew for a while that the lease would be up for either renewal or would end. That was about a year ago. And then, of course, the COVID hit, and that all came to a halt at that time. We pretty much had actually a deal in somewhere in January 21st and to extend the lease for 1 year with an option for a second year to exercise at that time. Then that was changed around the middle of February to 5 years only. I believe the landlord is ready to remodel or take down the building in the next, in 5 years or so. I was then luckily found a partner, Cole EC, and presented that to the landlord, but I was told that I was too late with the offer. So I was just not ready to sign a lease for a 5 years at the time. So that's where we are now. And unfortunately, I was never able to meet the new landlord, and all the negotiations were through landlord's agent. So that's unfortunately how it happened. But I think also for me, you know, I thought about my age and time, how long I've been here. So maybe everything happens for a reason. And I have so many ideas I still want to do and go on from here. So
well,
that's...
yeah, and I know this isn't how you wanted it to end, but that's it. I mean, this is it. So in terms of that, when is the last day of business?
Yes, we hope that we can, through the month of April, can still serve our clients, have going away parties, let people know everywhere. I didn't plan it that way, but that's the way it is. And so hopefully in April, you know, the end of April, that would be the end. And then month of May, we see how we can clear the building and see if they, what comes next.
Yeah. So the in terms of you being out of there, it's the end of May then?
Is that that's an agreement we had also. It changed a lot. It was kind of confusing. It changed a lot. And so hopefully that be the case, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, certainly for those of us who have been here a while, we know that you're really the only person that's been able to make a profit there at the location there at Kearns Boulevard and Monitor Drive. And I guess did you ever hear from the landlord in terms of why? I mean, why it's so important that he move you out? I mean, it better have somebody there than nobody there.
Yeah, I say so. But, you know, I had to deal with the help of some good friends to deal with the leasing agent. And that was never the case for the 22-some years I was in there before. I was always able to discuss the future with the landlord itself and had a really good relationship with that. So I didn't realize how serious this new landlord is in regards to that and could never really meet with him.
Mm. Well, let's talk a little bit about your 47 years here. I mean, I think the only... restaurant that has outlived you is Red Banjo, but I mean, we should even note that Mary Lou Tolley, she's not there. I mean, her family's running the restaurant. You're still working pretty much every night, and that's really rare. That's not how it used to be. I mean, I'm thinking back, there was you, of course, and Philippe's, and then we had, some of the owners at Shea Betty, but that's really a rare occurrence, right, to have the owner's chef actually there every night?
Yes, you don't see that anymore, and you probably won't in the future. You have managers and people who represent the restaurants. Then again, not too many restaurants are really named after the owner, so... At that time, when I first came here, you know, we started out with that. So then I did stay with that, and it was very successful all these years. And I didn't want to change that. And, of course, I was always happy to see my customers and talk to them and every night pretty much. And I have such a good crew there that did the rest.
Yeah.
So... Well, as you know.
Well, you and I go way back. I mean, I think I started working for you in 1982 and then have taken a couple of different breaks now and then. But, I still put a night or two here and there. So let's talk a little bit about how you got here. You were born in Switzerland, basically in the middle of World War II. So I guess if there was a place to be, Switzerland was the place to be in Europe at the time. So did you grow up skiing and ski racing?
Oh, you know, at that time, when I was 16, actually, I was then in Switzerland or Europe, then you start an apprenticeship with something. And my mother at that time ran a restaurant, and she saw probably that I had some interest in that and talent maybe. And I started an apprenticeship when I was 16. That lasted 3 years. Then I went to hotel school, restaurant management school. And so that was my profession, because without that, you really don't have a future. Ski racing, of course. I loved skiing from as little as I was 5, 6, 7 years old, followed all the Swiss team, the racing, and all together. And I was just really taken by that. Unfortunately, I never had the support of my family or my stepfather to further some, give me some help in that. So, but then in Switzerland, I did actually, after I came to America, I got into racing. I did very little since I left Switzerland so young. I mean, I was 21 when I left, that the future here in America was really great for me, and had so many opportunities to, with master racing and follow the World Cup like we had here for so long, that I was always part of that and supported, you know, the ski team and the racing, as you can see in my restaurant.
Yeah. So the a job then actually brought you to the States and the skiing?
Yes. How I came to the States or Park City, my last instructions I gave to a lady in St. Moritz was a lady from somewhere in New Orleans or so. And she said, well, I know this person, I have a friend, and he owns a ski resort somewhere he purchased. And that was at that time, of course, didn't know who that was. I think it was Edgar Stern. And then I went back to Vail, Colorado. And at that time, I received a call and was asked if I was interested in, they needed a food and beverage manager for Park City. And of course, the first thing I said, where is Park City? And that was 1971. So that's the time, that's how I found Park City, and I'm still here.
Yeah. So that was when you were actually running what we used to call the Rusty Nail?
Was it the whole resort? Yes, the whole resort, delicatessen, liquor store, and the cafeteria, and then the Summit House. We had the Angle Station also. That's some long history there.
Yeah.
And as you know.
And then decided, what, I can do this on my own, and then that's when you opened up the White House?
Yes, you know, in my profession, most chefs want to have their own place eventually. And then in 74, I found a little place. We called it Adolf's White House. The reason, probably it was a little building sort, and we painted it white and thought that would look good and called it the White House. I think that was the story behind it. And I stayed there for 3 years, 74, 77.
And then you moved, of course, to the golf course. And again, people, unless you've been around for a while, you probably don't remember that before the Hotel Park City. And again, we're there for maybe 20 years.
77, 97. And yeah. Actually, we opened it during my duration as a food and beverage manager, even before. But then they had different operators in there and didn't seem to work out. So they asked me to get back in there.
Ah, okay. And again, then that was redeveloped, and we got the Hotel Park City and now a national chain in the restaurant. But then you moved over to the Kearns and Monitor location, where it's certainly a restaurant, but also I always, you know, tell people, welcome to Adolf's Museum. You've got, of course, just memorabilia all over the walls from your 47 years. Talk to us a little bit. I mean, who's... I remember meeting Johnny Carson, of course, and Art Linkletter coming in. And just a slew of ski racers over the year.
Yes.
What were some of the highlights for you?
Oh, the highlights, God, there's so many, you know, from the celebrities to the World Cup, the athletes, and, you know, celebrities, Hollywood, Dustin Hoffman, Sidney Poitier, Ella Fitzgerald, I met her, Louis Armstrong, actually way back in Switzerland, Robert Redford. That was Johnny Carson, like you mentioned. We had so many, special events and excitement in there, you know, during all these years. A lot of them happened on the golf course. And then more after I moved to the current location. So, but most of all, we always had a great time with the ski team, U.S. ski team, and then all the different nationalities and the teams who came. During all the World Cups, they were in there whenever they could.
Yeah.
So it was quite exciting. And of course, I have so many memories and stories about that time.
Yeah. So what do you do with all of that memorabilia?
It will go to the university where we're going to duplicate the pictures. They asked me to save all that. And then I'm planning to do some kind of a picture recipe book, stories of the pictures I have, and add some recipes of my menu and the years past. And that's quite a project. And I have so many things I will have time to do, still do trips maybe with people to Europe, Switzerland, where we have the family has a hotel where I used to have trips before in the past, and either hiking or skiing trips. And there's so much to do, which I never had really time of.
Yeah.
So...
The staff, I mean, you've had people come and go. I mean, can't even think of how many, because so many of them are my friends, you know, from years past. But
yes,
your kitchen crew and your staff, I mean, you've had some of them for a while. I mean, how did they take the news?
Well, it wasn't great. It wasn't it was really a hard thing to do, and I'm still not done with it. And again, like I said before, I didn't plan it that way. I wanted to slowly phase out, and it just wasn't possible to do to do that. So it wasn't easy, and it probably didn't sink in yet for a lot of people. And I'm sure Park City, it's new to them that they don't have a regular watering hole, so to call. And so many locals who came there over the years, and I don't know really myself where would I go, you know, at my age now, to go out and relax. And we had such a great clientele over the years. So, you know, it's going to be a new thing. But then again, all things happen maybe for a reason. And certainly my daughter and son are happy with my decision. So I think we'll do the best to end, you know, the time we have left.
Yeah. Looking back, I mean, anything that you're extremely proud of? I mean, other than, I guess, just staying open, you know, through thick and thin, huh?
Yeah. Well, most of all, to be in business for, you know, 45 plus years is quite an accomplishment. You know, as you know, the restaurant business changes so much, especially during this last 12 months. And we actually created even more business. And so... it's a really hard business, and then Park City grew from very few restaurants back in the 70s to over 200. So yeah, competition is here, but I was never worried about that. And we, I think our menu really offered something for everybody, and I'm really proud of that. And thanks to the help we had over the year, which you knew quite a few of them, could remain steady and consistent.
Yeah, yeah. And then the decision to put your name on that one veal dish that someone... why that dish? The veal Adolphs.
The veal Adolphs. Yeah. Oh, that was...
Is that your favorite? Or?
Actually, not really. But then it was a dish from Switzerland, which the name would be very hard to pronunciate for the customers. And it's... In French or German is MSA de Wolf, and then in Swiss German it's Zürcher Geschnetzelt, which means Zurich, from the city of Zurich, which is a special dish in Switzerland, which you get in most restaurants. And I figured Veal Adolphs, that's a little easier for people. So
well, and
that's that. Yeah.
People, I mean, this is, you know, I joke with customers. They're like, oh, what's in the salad dressing? I'm like, well, it's going to go to the grave with them. But at some point, are you going to sell the recipe?
That's another thing. You know, there's plans there. But it's easy. It's not as easy as you think of. People think it is. You do it on a bigger scale, or then you're just, you know, trying to sell it out of your restaurant and eventually sell it to the stores, the local stores, which... is still feasible. And I asked Niels, my son, to help me with that. But then he's involved in making beer, and he's a brewmaster. So that's still in the works, and it can be done anytime, really, if I'm there or not. So there's so many things I really still want to do, and and I'm so happy to, most of all, I'm thankful to the people of Park City for their longstanding support, you know, I had here in Park City.
So even if there was a way for the community to get the landlord to change his mind, you're pretty much settled with moving on at this
point.
Well,
you never know. You never say no, and you never... But, you know, it's just so difficult, especially if I had a, you know, a partner all lined up, but then didn't really realize that I did have a deadline, which is not really the way it should be, but that's the way it ended to be.
Okay. So, anything else you want to tell the
community? Well, just thankful for being here and still being healthy, and especially during these last 12 months that we made it through this time, and I think things loosen up, and I've been lucky with my health and stay active and want to stay that way. Unfortunately, I didn't have much time to ski, but I already look forward to next season.
Yeah, right. So. Well, I got to thank you, too. I mean, you helped put me through college, met my husband, Adolf, right? I mean, that's a great story.
Well,
so
that was a pleasure. And
yeah.
I appreciate your help anytime I can get it.
All right, Adolf, thanks for coming in this morning. Good
luck. Thank you, Leslie.
That's Adolf and Bowden again announcing that he's closing the doors to Adolf's Restaurant at the end of the month. April is National Counseling Awareness Month. On the phone with an update from the Park City Christian Center Counseling and Wellness Center Program Coordinator is Catherine Kirchheimer. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So any special programming for the Christian Center for National Counseling Awareness Month?
Well, for us, we really are just celebrating internally. It gives us the opportunity to recognize all the hard work that our therapists, coaches, and team have done, particularly over the last year. So just some internal celebrations. You might see a little social media activity. The real external celebration comes when we switch into May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. But yeah, just really looking to honor what the team has done over the last year.
So in 2020, we know that you and your team were busy. Is it just as busy now in 2021?
Yes, sadly it is. But happily, it's good for us to know that people are reaching out. And so over the last year, we saw a 36% increase in counseling sessions and an 88% increase in scholarship sessions, which we're so grateful for all of the donations to our scholarship fund so that we can help those who might not have the financial support to seek that mental health support. But we are continuing to see the same trend here in Park City and in the local area, the same trend that's happening, you know, throughout the course of the country.
Yeah, so with regard to the scholarships, you won't turn people away if they don't have an ability to pay?
Absolutely not. We have an amazing program here that's supported by our donors, and we really will ask the clients, you know, how much are you comfortable paying? Is it $10? Is it $20? Whatever it may be, and then we'll help supplement the balance of that session.
Great. And at one point, I think I recall the counseling center was backed up for maybe a couple of months. I mean, is it a bit easier today to get in to see a therapist?
It might be a little bit easier. The team has grown. We've added a handful of therapists over the course of the last year. I'm sad to say, though, that we still see waiting lists for each of the clinicians. We're looking at about a four-week waiting time. If a client is a little more flexible and when they're willing or available to see a therapist, like in the mornings, Mondays and Fridays tend to be a little bit lighter, but the afternoons, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, tend to be the busiest, which is when kids are out of school. We've seen an increase in our children and teens seeking support. So the midweek afternoons are pretty tight, but mornings and early and late week would be have a little more flexibility and availability.
Yeah. Did you see, though, some of the anxiety and fear that kind of came with this whole pandemic going away or just being dealt with better? Or
I think that there have been more resources available because the, you know, mental health issues have been at the forefront of news here locally and nationally. I think there's a little bit of work being done to destigmatize people reaching out. So, of course, all the resources here at the Christian Center, as well as all the therapists and clinicians in the local area are busy, but I think that that's a good sign that people are reaching out and getting the support that they need. So while we're still having individuals reach out with issues with anxiety and depression, we're able to help them more, I think.
Yeah. And then you also have some other programs, not just one-on-one. You've got the group therapy that you offer, as well as the resiliency group called Phases.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we've recognized because there's it's hard to get in to see an individual for talk therapy, we've tried to think creatively and have looked to offer group opportunities. So in January, we had a grief recovery group, which was wonderful. We do have an upcoming teen girls resiliency group called Phases. It starts on April 20th. There's a middle school session as well as a high school session. It's a five-week program. And we actually still have availability in our high school session. Because of the demand that we've seen with the middle school age group, we're opening up the high school session to a broader age range. So that's at 3:15 on Tuesday, starting on April 20th for 5 weeks. And that particular session will now be open for grades 7 through 12. All of the information can be found on our website. You can register via Eventbrite, and we do have scholarship support available for that as well, as it is $150 for the full five-week session.
Okay. And then, as you mentioned, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Anything planned for that?
Yeah, we've got some exciting opportunities coming up. So on Sunday, May 16th, we're going to be doing an outdoor event called Walk It Out, Hiking with Your Mind, Body, and Soul. There will be two sessions in the afternoon. And so we're really looking forward to getting outside and having an in-person, still socially distanced activity to focus on our mind, body, and soul. And then on Thursday, May 20th, we actually have a follow-up to a seminar we did earlier this year called The Enneagram for Couples, Part 2. So our Enneagram coach, Mary Wright, is going to be hosting that again Thursday, May 20th, and that will be virtual via Zoom. So like I mentioned earlier with our Phases group, all of our group events and activities, the information can be found on our website. We'll also be promoting via social media.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to mention?
I think just a huge thank you to the community for all of their support, not just for the Counseling and Wellness Center, but also for the entire Christian Center. We really appreciate all the volunteers, the financial support. We couldn't do it without our fellow locals helping us and supporting us. So just a big, warm thank you. And thank you to you, Leslie, for having me on this morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Catherine. Catherine Kirchheimer, again, is the coordinator, program coordinator for the Christian Center, Park City Counseling and Wellness Center. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Good morning. Well, at last Thursday night's city council meeting, councilors got a look at what the city could be giving up if the $107 million Arts and Culture District gets the go-ahead. KPCW's Sean Higgins has the details.
It's been one of the biggest remaining questions about the proposed Arts and Culture District in Park City. How does spending $107 million on one project affect everything else the city might want to do in the next 10 years? At Thursday's City Council meeting, discussion about the district centered on that very issue. In short, if the city went ahead with the project in its current form, there's not much else that could get accomplished in the next decade, said senior financial analyst Eric Danitz.
We believe you would not be able to sustain our historical level of open space acquisition or affordable housing expense. Stated more generally, what that really means is that big and medium-sized projects would be difficult to do. You would be constrained on. In the ARST-TRT hybrid strategy that we've talked about, there would be significant constraints through 2031.
Danitz did specify that current projects would be sustained, but adding anything else in the realm of open space or affordable housing would be very hard to accomplish. With the countless numbers, acronyms, and spreadsheets that go along with financial discussions, it can be a tall order to keep track of everything, especially for a project as ambitious as the Arts and Culture District is. To help simplify what was being discussed, Councillor Nan Worrell framed the dilemma in a way many people can understand. Buying a house.
If I was going to go out and buy a home, I would figure out how much I had to spend. And then if I wanted to spend more than that, I would have to look at, okay, if I spend that, what can't I do? Or if I buy a less expensive home, what opportunities does that open up for me? So that's kind of the level I'd like to have this discussion, where if we choose to spend $107 million or whatever it is, then we can't do X. Or if we figure out what a budget is at a lower level, what can we get for that budget?
An intriguing slide presented on Thursday showed the potential tax revenue generated to the city's capital fund if the PEG development at the base of Park City Mountain Resort is approved. According to the finance team's model, the PCMR development could start bringing in money around 2025, increasing to around $1.5 million per year as the project nears completion, adding another interesting variable to the council's decision-making. Councilor Tim Henney told KPCW the council will only be getting deeper into the finance aspect of the project as discussions continue.
We're getting into the, I would say, the real meat of it, and what we want to avoid is we don't want to cut into the bone of all the other capital projects, and that's the big concern, and I think everybody shares that concern, and that's what you're hearing from the community, and everybody on the council shares that concern.
The next city council meeting is scheduled for April 15th. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
An important meeting, especially for residents of the North Summit area, is coming up May 6th. Summit County Development Director Pat Putt says the East County Planning Commission will be given an update and inviting public comment on the Cedar Crest Village Overlay Zone proposed for the Hoytsville area. Putt told us that the developers are not presenting a final plan, but the last public meeting on the overlay zone open house was well over a year ago. And as he reminded us, the proposed overlay zone involves 1,000 acres around Hoytsville with some 26 property owners.
We've developed over the course of the last year and a half a series of iterations to a land plan. I wouldn't say that they're three different plans. They're really a refinement of a series of exercises looking at that 1,000 acres.
He said that the committee planning the overlay area has broken it up into several different neighborhoods. He says they want the public to tell them if they're implementing the original vision for the zone, kind of cradle to grave community.
An opportunity not only for the folks who live there now or their families, you know, who live there now or may come back. If it's possible, can you create a place for young families to establish themselves as those families grow, a place to, you know, scale up on those sorts of things. And as, you know, individuals get older into the retirement, the downsizing, you know, is there an opportunity to create a place for them without necessarily exporting kids or the elderly citizens in the area? Is there an opportunity to create a real civic identity? Can we implement amenities like open space and trails? And, you know, can it be done with a way that there is an expectation that over time that they can grow as rooftops happen? Can they grow community services without always not having to drive into Park City, Salt Lake, or Ogden?
That's Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. This is KPCW Park City.